Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed by Richard Martin, Senior Vice President of Global Strategic Investments, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent those of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments made on the basis of Mr. Martin's comments are entirely unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener or investor.
Gentlemen, Richard Martin here with Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. I don't know where to start. You know, there's so much news, so much to tell you about. I'm really sort of conflicted as to whether to spend the time talking to you about news and things that are happening, or whether to take the time to explain things and take a sort of step back. But anyway, we've got a lot to talk about today, and I want you please to get some paper and a pen ready, because I'm going to dictate a letter to you in a few moments, so please get ready for that. There will be no show on Monday. I believe it is some public holiday here. I think it might be President's Day or somebody's day. Anyway, there won't be any show. I'm not sure what PRN have for you, but it may be that they will have a replay or something, but there will be no technician, and therefore no show. There's an interesting comment that came out of a recent article in the New York Times, and the article is called "The Thrifty American Becomes a Nightmare for Global Economy," which I thought I would like to read to you. It's very short, but it seems to be sharp and to the point. And I quote, "The U.S. consumer is famously big-hearted and small-brained. He has been willing to ruin himself in order to boost up the global economy, putting himself deeper and deeper into debt so the Chinese can build factories and put peasants to work on assembly lines. But now the poor American, the world's buyer of first and last resort, the selfless taker of all the world's junk, gadgets, and gaudy luxuries, has reached the end of his rope. With no alternative left to him, he seems to be coming to his senses." Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know why house prices are going down and will be going down for years to come, just consider that Americans haven't consistently saved 5 to 10% of their income in decades, and they're currently at 0% savings or even negative. How will they put together the required deposit for a house? I mean, take a two-earner American household, which has, let's assume, an average disposable income of $70,000 a year. You know, they want to buy, let's say, a $300,000 house. They will have to put down 15% minimum, which, of course, is $45,000. Well, from zero, they're going to have to save 5% of income for up to 13 years. Or if they can save 10%, that's 6.5 years, before they can even think of buying that house. Well, they say truth is stranger than fiction. Let's have some news. Amazingly enough, and I'm not making this up, UBS, the UBS bank, have just come up with what they call a super-duper senior alt-A hybrid bond. And it's described as carving out high-quality bonds out of super-senior AAA classes and calling them super-duper senior bonds. Well, that sounds good to me. I hope your local 12-year-old is happy. Who was it that had a comment the other day that it was too, somebody's 12-year-old had it too boring. They liked the music, but the thing was too boring. Well, tell them about the super-duper bombs. Maybe they'll, you know, come to attention. You realize now that condos are being blacklisted. Banks don't want to lend. In fact, they really can't lend. The Business Journal obtained a list of non-permissible projects, such as they're called, used internally at Bank United and updated as of January the 14th. Most of what they call the forbidden properties were in Miami and were added at the last update. Declining market value was the biggest culprit, followed by high investor concentration, as much as 70% in one case. Bank United also cited numerous foreclosures, delinquent homeowners association dues, structural-based litigation, and the bank's existing exposure in the buildings. Well, the idea is that the bank will shrink its balance sheet, and it's starting by restricting loans to condo buyers. These banks worry that condo values could drop below the purchase price and the buyers could walk away from the loan. So think of what that's going to do to condo prices. You know, even buyers with good credit can't get a mortgage for a condo that has an uncertain value, according to Lewis Goodkin, president of Miami-based Goodkin Research. He said that because sales have been so slow and 35 to 40% of buyers could pull out of contracts in some buildings, no one knows the real value of these condos. And if the lenders don't know the value, he said, they can't set a loan-to-value ratio with any certainty. But you know, the key point of this, which isn't even mentioned in the article, is the domino effect. Anyone who purchased a unit and closed on it is now trapped. There's no one to sell because no financing is available. So by publicly posting the exclusion list, other lenders are sure to follow suit. It will become difficult, if not impossible, to purchase a unit in any of the projects that are actually listed in Miami, and I have a list of them, by the way. The implication is a substantial number of those projects will fail. Whatever banks finance the condo towers are going to end up owning them. Those who have placed a down payment on a unit but haven't yet closed may wish to seek legal advice to see if the shutdown of bank financing is somehow material to the purchase agreement. Some no doubt will simply decide to walk away regardless of the answer. Well, MBIA, the bond insurance company, wants lawmakers and regulators to curtail what they call the unscrupulous and dangerous market manipulation of the short sellers. That's people like us, ladies and gentlemen, people who believe things are going to get worse, who sell short. Well, I have a very interesting statistic for you here, because it has often been noted that when companies are doing badly, they whip round and they start blaming short sellers for trying to force down the price of the stock. Well, that ploy has exactly a 100% failure rate. And by that I mean it never works because nobody can stop people selling short. And the other rather grim aspect of this is that historically it is really a fact that any company who blames short sellers tends to be in trouble themselves and therefore is itself a good short sale. So we shall see whether MBIA follows the traditional pattern or not. The ratings agencies insist that the rating systems must be revamped. The lawmakers must support capital raising activities if the bond insurers become failures, and that might have far-reaching effects on the U.S. and global economies. And all because they used AAA ratings to jump into investing in areas they knew nothing about. Well, MBIA is a marked company, I can tell you right now. The CEO received $4.47 million, that's Gary Dunton, for last year. The CFO received $1.5 million, that's Edward Chaplin. The company had a $1.47 billion loss for the quarter, for the last quarter. You know, what happens if they go belly up? How much worse will the mortgage credit crunch become then? You know, Ambac, which is another of these companies, their top executives received $3.05 million in cash bonuses for last year, even though Fitch downgraded the company to AA, and S&P's and Moody's are reviewing the situation. I mean, you know, this is America, where the streets are paved with gold, apparently. Mm-hmm. Well, the muni bond auctions, that's auctions for the emission of new bonds by the municipalities, are not producing sufficient bids. You know, in times past, when the banks put out bids for these securities, they would step up and fill in the shortfall with their own money. But they're not doing that anymore because they know that there is no market out there. Well, what's going to happen if these municipalities can't get the money they need through the bonds that they float? Answer, they will have to pay higher rates for the bonds that they do manage to get off. This will involve budget overruns for their municipalities. That will involve higher taxes or reduced services or employment cutbacks. You know, nobody has any money anymore. It's all being committed or miscommitted. You know, there's no one to step up to the plate anymore for the good use of capital. Then you have General Motors, who just had its worst quarter ever, and now they want to pay off the workers to take early retirement and, of course, shift future production overseas. Well, that's nice. Okay, my name is Richard Martin. This is Richard Martin's wake-up call, and there are various ways in which you can contact us, starting with my own direct personal number for any private issues that you may have. It is, my number here is 305-357-5575. Let me repeat that. 305-357-5575. If you want to email me, you can also do so by emailing the following address, and please keep to small letters to lowercase, and the address is rmartin@gscorporation.com. I will repeat that, and please remember the word corporation should be written out in full. GS is for Global Strategic, where I work, Global Strategic Investments. And again, the email address is rmartin@gscorporation.com. Okay, now, if you want to call the station direct, you can do that too, and ask your questions right now on the air. And for that, you may call our toll-free number at 888-873-4643. Let me repeat the number. 888-873-4643. Okay. So, I talked to you a few days ago about the problems that I'm beginning to suspect may appear with the 401k investments that many of you will have. Namely, it is extremely hard to find a treasury-based money market fund. Many of you have written to me and called me asking me what you should do if there is no such option in your menu. And I have said that you should call your benefits administrator and insist that they add into the mix of choices a treasury-based money market fund. Some of you have done that and been given, have been blown off, we don't have that, we don't do that. Ladies and gentlemen, it's very important for you to understand that this costs your company no money. There is zero cost involved with adding a particular investment to the mix. So there's really no excuse for this, given that a U.S. Treasury-based money market fund is clearly the most secure investment that money can buy. So I do want you to insist, and I want you to call, this is why we need the pen and paper here, because I'm going to ask you to do two things. First of all, find out and call up the benefits director or the administrator responsible for contacting the 401k provider, whoever that may be. In other words, the liaison between your company and the 401k plan. Okay, find out who that person is, talk to them. When you have put the phone down on them, I want you to write them a letter. Write it to them, care of your company, the address, etc. And this is what I want you to say, or words to this effect. This is just an outline that you might wish to use in this matter. Okay. So it will be, dear Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. And now if you want to write this down quickly, I'm going to read it fairly fast, so just get what you can and then flesh it out accordingly. So you want to refer to your phone conversation that you've just had. So you'll say, subsequent to our phone conversation of, and then you put the date, I confirm that I wish to be able to select a U.S. Treasury money market fund as defensive protection against an imploding economy. Okay, period. All of the other choices within our plan have varying degrees of risk and are speculative to one degree or another. Period. Until this option is made available, I fully intend to hold the company responsible for any drawdown on losses that may result from its failure to provide an adequate repository for me to be able to protect my retirement assets. Okay, that's it. Now, two things that you should do at that point. You should get your colleagues to do the same thing. Ladies and gentlemen, this is very, very serious. I mean, this is not some kind of a far-fetched attempt to cover yourselves in case of some difficult to describe catastrophe that may or may not happen sometimes in the next, you know, X number of years. This is very, very serious. And I believe that there will be problems and many people may have trouble with their money market funds in and out of 401k plans. So you want to get your colleagues to write the same letter. The more of you that do this, the more likely the benefits people are to take you seriously. Again, remember that there is no cost to your company to have this additional fund option made available, okay? So go ahead and do this. And one more thing, remember to send your letter by certified mail with return receipt requested. It would cost you $4 or $5, but it's money well worth spent, okay? Now, if you didn't get the full wording of the letter, don't worry. Write something similar, but hopefully shortly the archive to this show will be made available, so you'll be able to listen to it and get it from that. But one way or another, please do your best to cover yourself in that respect. Okay. Right. Let's have a look at some of the mail that came in this week. The first one comes from Chris in Philadelphia, who says, and I read, I was listening to your show, which I find very entertaining and informative, and your dire predictions made me wonder if I should purchase some silver coins in preparation for the looming economic hardship rather than saving dollars in my bank account. Thanks, Chris from Philadelphia. Well, by coincidence, we had another letter from Julie, who pretty much had the same kind of question. So I'm going to put both of them together and try to answer them in one. She wrote, Richard, thank you for all your work in getting the truth out. I listened to you and Gary in the fall of 2005 about the housing market, took your advice, and sold at the top of the market in Bergen City, New Jersey. Well, Julie, that's a satisfying thing to have done, to have got you out at the top of the market. Congratulations, and I hope many of you will have also managed to get out at a high price too. So she continues, what is your opinion on silver and gold? I do not believe I have ever heard you speak on this topic. Silver seems to be a good buy right now. Your thought? Signed, Julie. Well, you're absolutely right, Julie. I haven't discussed this. I try not to discuss silver and gold because I think they are a speculation. There's different kinds of speculation, if you like. There's speculating on what I would describe as the next best thing to a sure thing, i.e. a stock market which is likely to collapse over the next few months and years. And then there are other varying degrees of speculation. Should you buy bonds? Should you buy commodities? You know, just because a group of investments happens to be going up doesn't mean that it's going to continue to go up. And that's my fear for any of these investments, whether it's silver, gold, soybeans, or wheat, or any of these things that have been going up, you know, dramatically over the last few, you know, weeks, months, and sometimes years. This is kind of like jumping in or rushing after the train when it's already left the station. You just might fall on your face. I would continue to say the same thing. If you want to have security of your money, buy treasury bills for the time being, and then when I give you, you know, the word or the signal, buy long-term government bonds. I don't think that it's going to work to try to jump in on a trend which has already been in motion for several years in the hope that you can jump out again before that trend turns around and comes back down. So I wouldn't do that. I could be wrong. You could see a sizable rally in these precious metals, but this is not something that I feel comfortable speculating in at this point. And believe me, this is a speculation. You see, if gold was still tied to the dollar through the gold standard, it wouldn't be a speculation. because then whatever happened to the dollar would happen to gold, and vice versa. So then I would, of course, be able to recommend that you purchased, precious metal stocks in the stock market, the different exchange-traded funds pertaining to metals, and all kinds of investments that would be exciting and interesting. But you see, it isn't. Gold is not tied to the dollar. Therefore, it is a free agent. Therefore, it can rise and fall on its own merits. And those kinds of investments are very volatile, and I don't think that they probably belong in the portfolio of most of you. If you do wish to talk to me about that separately, you're very welcome to do so. But I can tell you, I don't have any of my clients in gold or silver right now. So you are not going to be joining a band of favored people by coming into that particular situation. It won't happen, not on the basis of my advice, anyway. All right. Now, I just got a letter in from Mark, who says, good afternoon, about the letter we should write to our benefit departments. How can we hold our companies responsible for not providing a treasury-based account? I'm not sure that you can, Mark. I'm not sure that you can. But basically, the idea here is to put pressure on them to provide a treasury money market fund. I mean, there's no reason why they shouldn't. They're not going to do themselves any harm. They're not going to make they are not in any way disadvantaged by providing you with this. It's just because they don't feel like it. If they don't do it, it's because they're just too lazy to go to their people and spend the 5 or 10 minutes it takes to talk to them and say, hey, we would like a treasury money market fund attached to our menu of choices, please. You know how people are. They just don't do it. So if they see, a wave of letters coming in threatening them, with action if anything should go wrong, it's just more likely to give them that push that they may need, Mark. Good question. It remains to be seen, by the way, if they can be held responsible. I mean, the major thing, that's why I say send it with return receipt requested, because if you have a paper trail of having insisted on an investment which is impervious to any kind of downdraft of the economy or the markets or anything else, and you don't have that, I wonder if it doesn't remain to be seen whether they don't have a fiduciary responsibility towards your money. Or at least provide you with that possibility, especially after you've requested it. It's worth a try, and it's definitely not going to do you any harm. So there we have it. All right. Another question comes from Trish O. By the way, let me give you again my number here, my toll-free number, 888-873-4643. Once more, 888-873-4643. So then, Trish, a very faithful and frequent listener who communicates frequently with us, has written an email to me saying, Richard, have you heard anything negative about KeyBank? Actually, I don't know KeyBank, but there it is. I found one thing on the implodometer, but nothing else. Now, the implodometer is the device that I gave you, the electronic device that you can consult on your computers when you are looking to see how well your bank is doing. You can enter it in, and your bank, you put in your bank, and you find out, if in fact it's going under or what its situation is. I continue. Then I heard on one show that KeyBank is in trouble with their commercial paper. I mean bankrupt trouble. I called them and asked them if they are having trouble, and they told me no, but I could tell that this person didn't know what she was talking about. If you know anything about KeyBank, can you please let us all know? I really don't know what other bank to go to. I received a flyer in the mail for a local bank offering 5.61% on a CD. That to me says we are in trouble and need your money to finance our failing business. Trish, it also means it's a come-on. It's a carrot. You get your juicy rate for 6 months, and then they drop the rate down to something which is utterly absurd. So they just want to get you in there. That's why they offer these high rates on CDs. Sometimes they're even, loss leaders. They don't even make any money. But they're desperate to get your funds in there. Just as they always have been, this is nothing new. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're in trouble, but it does mean that you're likely to have a very much disadvantaged rate when that rate runs out at the end of the CD period. So I just continue to the end of your email, Trish. How do we pick a bank? When you ask important questions, the person you're talking to doesn't even have a clue that there is a problem in the first place. Thanks, Trish. Well, Trish, you're absolutely right in everything you say. And I have given out this email address before. Website address before. I'm going to give it to you again now. You put in the name of your bank and you see what they say. It's a rating agency of banks. So please use your piece of paper and pen that you have written down your letter on, and we'll continue to write. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you an address that you can consult for banks, and you can see how your bank stacks up. Off we go. It's www.bankrate.com/BRM, as in Brian Richard Mary, /safe sound, or one word, safe sound. That's SAFESOUND, like safe and sound. Safe sound. /SS, as in sugar, home.ASP for Apple Sugar Peter. Okay, let me repeat that address. Keep that handy. And as I said to you once before when I gave you this address, consult this site every 6 months or so to see if, you know, your bank has come up as being an iffy institution and maybe you need to change banks. Okay, once more, the website, www.bankrate.com/BRM, that's Brian Richard Mary, /safe sound/SS for sugar, home.ASP. All right. The next piece of mail is a disaster story, a horrible situation, which I hope has happened to none of you except, this one poor person who is also a very loyal and regular listener, Joanne Evahardis. She writes to me. She wrote to me on Monday, as a matter of fact, just after the show ended. And I read you her letter, so please take this seriously because it can happen to any of you if you're not careful. Back in October, with your wonderful advice, I changed the investment elections in my 401k to the investment that was Treasury bills. They told me to do it online. I was happy and content. I was very happy and content after doing this. When I received my account statement 3 months later, there was no evidence that I had made the change. And I had lost about 20% of what I would have had if the change had gone through. When I spoke to an account person, she said that after you change your investment elections, you have to go to another part of the website and do what is called rebalance your portfolio. She said people make this mistake a lot, that all the time people don't realize they should do this. There is nothing that says after you change your investment elections that you have to do another step, which is rebalance your account. She admitted that the website should be changed. I no longer work, and I lost $2,000. I wonder if they'd had a client who lost $20,000 or $200,000, would the investment person have been so casual and nonchalant about the money I lost because their website isn't clear? I guess this is just a heads up to your listeners that they should make sure they have correctly balanced their retirement account and that the change has gone through. Joanne. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen, a grim and horrible story. The moral here, of course, is check. either that the same day you make the changes, or the following day when the changes have had a chance to be posted to the system, that the changes actually have been made. But always, always verify that any changes that you make to your 401k have actually gone through. Even if you didn't have an opportunity to make them online, if you had to make them, you know, through a representative, call them back the following day to check that the changes actually went through. You can never rely on anybody these days. I mean, it doesn't matter what situation you're in, what industry, what service it is. You just have to go through the process again and again. And unfortunately, this is no exception. And then we had another question that came from Larry in New York, who writes to me, "Dear Richard, could you speculate on any background motivation to this financial tsunami? It seems to me the virtual giveaway of money to the American public has had a very predictable effect. If it was predictable and destruction to the general public is the effect, who did it? Any words in this area? Larry." Yes, Larry, I can. And I don't actually have to speculate. I can give you the reason why this happened. It's a five-letter word, Larry. It's called greed. See, the people with the purse strings, the people in the money in the financial services industry, are the people that make these decisions. Shall you have a loan? Shall you not have a loan? May you buy this house? May you not buy this house? This is all done courtesy of the banks and the people who run the banks and those who administer the banks, like the Federal Reserve. All these people have been conspiring against the American people to allow them to do things that they never should have been allowed to do in the first place. And I'm talking about car loans, I'm talking about home loans, I'm talking about mortgages or home equity loans, whichever. Credit card advances, which never should be allowed to see the light of day. All of these things have been done so that the financial services people could squeeze the maximum amount of money out of you and get away with it. Well, you see, the problem is they're not going to get away with it because they overdid it, and therefore the people can't pay them back. And so they're now going to suffer the horrible consequences of their own greed. And that's really it in a nutshell. I don't think there's anything else to be said. I mean, there's all kinds of, subsidiary justifications and explanations and arguments, but I'm not going to make them because it just confuses you. And so long as you realize the essential, then you've got it all. It's greed. Nothing but pure, unadulterated greed. Okay? Well, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what I wanted to talk to you about last time, and I've got a little challenge for you, ladies and gentlemen. When I spoke to you before, in fact, I didn't get very far with this because somebody asked a question and that took up the rest of the time that we had together, but I was going to talk to you about the process by which banks are going to fail, because you're going to hear a lot about bank failures in the coming weeks and months and years. So I thought I'd talk to you a little bit about that, but I made a comment, and I said, I want you to bear this in mind, please. It is a statistic that I want all of you to hold in your heads. And I read it to you twice. And I would like to hear from anybody who can remember what that was. Pick up the phone, please, and call in. Give us your name and proudly enunciate the statistic that I gave you and told you to memorize. So I'll give you a couple of minutes to do that. And then I will, if I don't hear from you, I will tell you what it was. Okay. So what you need to know about bank failures is that, by the way, I'll give you a hint. It had something to do with bank failures. So that should help you on your way. Okay. You need to understand that there are going to be more asset seizures, such as we've seen in all kinds of different directions. The latest was, of course, this French bank whose trader managed to lose $7.4 billion of the traders of the bank's money through injudicious trading. There will be increases to loan loss reserves, and, of course, there will be more problem banks. And that, of course, will lead to an increase in bank failures. Now, there are four main reasons why banks will fail. They will fail because they do not have sufficient reserves. Now, this is already a problem. They haven't failed yet, but they did not maintain the reserves they were supposed to maintain, and the authorities looked the other way, so now they are heavily exposed. They will fail because they cannot borrow the reserves they need because they do not have sufficient collateral. Okay. They will fail because the Federal Reserve's collateral requirements do not permit printing money and handing that money over to failing banks. So they're not going to be able to depend on the Federal Reserve to fill in, you know, where the balance sheet fails. And then finally, the Fed will not change those requirements and start printing money because of what is called the checkmate scenario, which I will now tell you about. One even has to wonder whether the Fed cares about these borrowed reserves. So one of my favorite economists, called Paul Tazreel, who's the chief economist of Northern Trust in Chicago, he made the following comment. He said, there is no relationship between non-borrowed reserves and anything the Fed cares about, be it inflation, employment, or real GDP. Now, we've talked about reserves before, ladies and gentlemen. I've told you that the banks are by law required to set aside a certain amount of money, of pure cash, but they're not allowed to invest or to lend, as it were, a buffer against tough times where they may need to draw down on those reserves. And that's a requirement from the Federal Reserve itself, and it's been in existence since the Fed originally started to create the requirements of banks way back almost 100 years ago. Okay. I think that Tazreel is correct about this, by the way. The Fed has not been concerned about so many of the things that history proves they should have been concerned about. You know, housing, lending standards, derivatives, arms, asset bubbles, all of these things that have come about could have been prevented by the Federal Reserve as part of their charter, as part of what it was within their purview to deal with according to their charter. So they're not dealing with this, has permitted this problem to come about. Now, here's the deal here. The bank reserves are net borrowed. And this comes at a time when commercial real estate is about to plunge and bank balance sheets are loaded to the gills with them. So in other words, they really don't exist. Those reserves don't exist. Now, it also comes at a time when social attitudes towards debt are going to impair Ben Bernanke's ability to inflate. Okay? Now, there's been a lot of information recently on social attitudes. There was a famous program on 60 Minutes a few weeks ago called Walking Away, other social programs like Now and Frontline are talking about, you know, the implications of the social attitudes towards debt, okay? Banks are not going to be able to lend freely in the future as long as the rules state all advances must be fully collateralized. So you see, once the collateral runs out, it's the end of the line. And if the Fed is not concerned about this situation, I assure you they soon will be. Now, of course, there are those who believe the Fed will break the rules and eliminate all collateral requirements. But so far, anyway, they have not done so. All right, let's assume at this point that when push comes to shove, the Fed, acting under duress, does in fact provide permanent capital for free. Okay? Now, this of course involves massive printing of money. I want you just to imagine what this would do to the US dollar and the long-term interest rates. Well, this is actually, this being the only effective measure that the Fed could do, i.e. print money and just hand it over to the banks to forestall their demise, would really be a checkmate scenario, you know? And by the way, it's why the Fed wouldn't do it, even if they could, because the market just wouldn't allow it. Okay? Now, Paul Kasriel said, it's check for the economy, now it's facing checkmate. Those were his words. So it's not just me, you know, inventing a term here. Now, the checkmate, of course, is the dollar. Because Bernanke's problem is that if he cuts short-term rates, that is going to be very inflationary, which will have a very downward pressure on the dollar, which, of course, will go down even more than it is already. And this is something that Ron Paul talks about. You know, the Fed errantly allowing the dollar to fall, thereby making everything expensive for the rest of us and causing, you know, outrageous inflation. Okay? You see, credit events, that's to say when you have a credit crunch or a credit problem, they are deflationary by nature. You see, when lenders, such as we've seen, when they sustain large losses, as we've already seen with the subprime problem, when those lenders sustain those kind of losses, they can't extend credit because they simply don't have the money to extend credit with. And, cutting interest rates is one thing, but physical printing of dollars is another. Now, I'm going to talk much more about this question of printing dollars on a future occasion, because it's very important you have to understand why this really can't happen. But basically, you're beginning to see the effect of the Fed being unable to do the only thing that it could do. Okay, there was an interesting interview that Mike Shedlock had with Paul Kasriel. And I'm just going to read you a very short passage from this, and you'll get to see what I mean. Kasriel, he said, and I quote, U.S. banks currently hold record amounts of mortgage-related assets on their books. If the housing market were to go into a deep recession resulting in massive mortgage defaults, the U.S. banking system could sustain huge losses similar to what the Japanese banks experienced in the 1990s. If this were to occur, the Fed could cut interest rates to zero, but it would have little positive effect on economic activity or inflation. Short of the Fed depositing newly created money directly into private sector accounts, I suspect that a deflation would occur under these circumstances. Again, crippled banking systems tend to bring on deflations, and crippled banking systems seem to result from the bursting of asset bubbles because of the sharp decline in the value of the collateral backing bank loans. So then Shedlock asks, so when does it all end? And Kasriel replies, that is extremely difficult to project. If the current housing recession were to turn into a housing depression, leading to massive mortgage defaults, it could end. Alternatively, if there were a run on the dollar in the foreign exchange market, price inflation could spike up, and the Fed would have no choice but to raise interest rates aggressively. Given the record leverage in the U.S. economy, the rise in interest rates would prompt large-scale bankruptcies. These are the two checkmate scenarios that come to mind. Well, you see, that's just it, ladies and gentlemen. That is the problem. And that's basically why this is a nightmare, because the Fed is unable to do anything to prevent the situation that we're about to see unfold in front of our eyes. And that is truly the waking nightmare that we all have to live with during the months and the years to come. Well, thank you very much. Susan Alexander, no less, came in with the email of the comment that I had mentioned that I wanted you to maintain in your minds, and I will read it to you. Banks have about 300% more liabilities in commercial real estate than they have assets, and they have about 100% in other liabilities than they have assets or cash reserves. That is absolutely correct. They have 300% more liabilities in commercial real estate than they have assets. How do you cover your debts when you are three times behind the curve? How about you don't? You go bankrupt. And if you don't think commercial real estate is going to do it for you, they have about 100% more in other liabilities than they have in assets or cash reserves. So one way or another, it's checkmate. Now, what I have read to you, believe me, this is very, very important information. What I have talked to you about just now, along with Susan's rendition of my comment from Monday, that'll do it for you, ladies and gentlemen. You don't need to know more. So when you see these banks collapsing and falling in the stock market and one going on under followed by another, remember the conversation we had today. Remember what I told you. Remember the checkmate scenario. And if there's one person who doesn't sleep easy in bed at night, I assure you, it is Ben Bernanke. You know, basically, there will be dozens of banks that fail in the next couple of years as losses from soured loans mount and regulators crack down on lenders that take too much risk. RBC Capital Markets analyst Gerard Cassidy said, and I quote, between 50 and 150 U.S. banks, as many as one in 57, could fail by early 2010. Mostly those with no more than a couple of billions of dollars or assets. That rate of failure would be the highest in at least 15 years or since the winding down of the savings and loan debacle. The initial round of failures will come from smaller banks with limited access to capital and overexposure to commercial real estate. Could banks with $75 billion or $100 billion of assets fail? That's hard to say, but it depends on the severity of the economic downturn and the real estate decline, he added. So you see, already banks are under pressure as a slowing economy and the housing crunch and the weak job growth and rising energy costs are making it harder for individuals and businesses to pay their bills. And then you've got this seizing up of capital that has led to more than $130 billion of write-downs worldwide, including, you know, such lenders as Citigroup, you know, Bank of America, Washington Mutual. And last Wednesday, Standard & Poor's said that financial industry losses linked to mortgages may reach more than $265 billion. And Standard & Poor's are the, you know, the credit rating agency that know more than anybody else about these things, so you can take them seriously. Cassidy said, the regulatory focus is now acutely on commercial real estate. The problems are centered around construction loans in residential housing. Home prices and sales are declining. This leaves builders unable to carry the debt they took on because they can't sell their homes. There are, 8,553 banking institutions insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. Of these, 7,285 are commercial banks, 1,257 are thrifts, and 11 are branches of foreign banks. 26 banks have failed since the last U.S. recession began in March 2001. The latest came last week with Douglas National Bank of Kansas City, which collapsed. Another bank took over its deposits. Cassidy expects the bank failure rate to be the worst since at least 1993, when 50 banks collapsed. That followed more than 2,000 failures in the previous decade, and that's according to FDIC data. Still, of course, right now we know that that pales in comparison with the more than 9,000 bank failures from 1930 and 33 during the Great Depression, and that comes from the Federal Reserve data. Well, I think we're going to see, all of you know, ladies and gentlemen, that I think we're going to see a downturn much more severe than that of 1930 to 33, but quite frankly, I don't know enough about the situation of banks and how they stand to know how that's going to affect them, but I assure you that it will. One of the top U.S. bank regulators, the controller of the currency, called John Dugan, said on Thursday that his office was prepared to intervene if banks with large real estate exposure maintained unreasonably low reserves for bad loans. And then Cassidy said, well, a tough credit and regulatory environment may make it hard for struggling banks to find suitors. So it isn't even very likely that at this point banks that are having trouble will in fact be able to find anybody to take them over. So it really is a nightmare scenario. And like I said, this has been a very important talk that I've given you today, ladies and gentlemen, because I do think that if you understand what I said, you will be in a much better position to come to grips with what's going to come in the future. And again, I always suggest that if you've had a problem following through with the things I've said, because some of them are quite complicated, don't hesitate to listen to the archives. And I have made a specific request for these archives to come out in a timely fashion, so that you have the opportunity to go in there and review them while the information is sort of still fresh in your mind. And I would urge those of you who didn't listen to my show last week on Thursday that I had mentioned should hopefully listen to it, or the part in it where I explain a kind of grim scenario by Nouriel Roubini of NYU, of New York, a professor at New York University, who explains sort of step by step through 12 steps how we are going to actually reach the ultimate crisis that lies ahead. And I do suggest that you go there if you didn't get a chance to listen to it. I know it's up. The archive is actually there. It comes from the 7th of February, which is exactly a week ago, my show from Thursday of last week. It's about 20 minutes in. It starts out with a rather irreverent look at America, courtesy John Cleese, which you might enjoy. But what's much more important is that you go into the broadcast about 20 minutes, where I outline and explain in detail the process of these 12 steps starting now, which lead us down inexorably into really the hell of a total economic and financial implosion that is, frankly, looking more and more like it really is inevitable. But there it is, ladies and gentlemen. I know that I won't be here on Monday, so I'll be back, this time next week on Thursday. I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about some of the elements of what we've been seeing in recent years in terms of money leaving the country and how that happens, because it's actually quite fascinating to see, to follow along, as it were, with a dollar that you spend, and to see how it gets back into your pocket, having passed through, hands with people like the Chinese or the Japanese or the Taiwanese or the Koreans or whoever. It is quite interesting, and I'll talk about that next time, next Thursday, unless something more pressing comes up in the meantime. So anyway, have a wonderful weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy your long weekend, the President's Day, and I look forward to talking to you this time next week. This is Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, saying bye-bye for now.